Welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Beyond the Book. It is Friday, June 5th, 2020. Every week we check in with Publishers Weekly for the latest news on books and publishing. Today, Andrew Albanese, PW Senior Writer, joins me from his home office in New York City. Welcome back to the program, Andrew.
Hey there, Chris.
Earlier this spring, Andrew, at the height of the COVID-19 crisis, you reported on the Internet Archive and its so-called National Emergency Library, which offers access to scanned copies of print books to users around the world, according to its controlled digital lending theory. This week, we learned that the publishers have had enough, four publishers in particular, with support of the Association of American Publishers, AAP, announced on Monday they are filing suit against the Internet Archive for copyright infringement.
Yeah, get your popcorn, right? Here we go again. I mean, we're in the middle of a pandemic, but here we go. We're going to have another major copyright suit here in the publishing industry. And I can't say I'm surprised, though in recent weeks, I did hold out hope, and we even spoke about it on this program. I held out hope that a lawsuit wouldn't actually materialize. But here we are, back in court with a major copyright case, a book scanning case, no less, a case to my mind that could be something of a defining copyright case for the book scanning era.
All right, then. So tell us, what are the publishers alleging in their suit?
Sure. So the plaintiffs here are Hachette, HarperCollins, Wiley, and Penguin Random House. But, you know, this case is really all about the Association of American Publishers, which, you know, has been very vocal about this, and they've issued a release in support of the case. And, you know, I guess a few housekeeping notes to start here. The suit has been filed in the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of New York here in Manhattan. It's going to be in Judge John G. Codall's courtroom. And this is the judge who initially had the defamation suit filed by former Barnes & Noble CEO Demos Pineros before he punted that suit down the road. Anyway, you know, for what it matters, having been in Judge Codall's courtroom a few times, I could tell you he is a no-nonsense judge, and he has a lot of rules for how cases proceed in his courtroom. For example, in the Barnes & Noble suit, he required hearings before any major motions could be filed, like a motion to dismiss or a motion for summary judgment. Anyway, as for the complaint by the four publishers, it's not terribly complicated. The complaint is not terribly complicated. The publishers allege straight-up infringement. They allege that the Internet Archive's scanning and public display and distribution of PDFs of books that they've scanned is simply not allowed under copyright. And in the war of words that always sort of precedes the war in court, AAP President and CEO Maria Palante accused the Internet Archive of, and I'll quote her here, conducting and promoting copyright infringement on a massive scale. And of course, the Authors Guild got on board too. The Authors Guild president Doug Preston chimed in with his somewhat trademark hyperbole at this point, saying that what the Internet Archive was doing was the equivalent of throwing a brick through a store window and handing out stuff, which I found, you know, pretty galling and tone deaf, and that's actually kind of happening around the country right now. Anyway, Preston accused the Internet Archive of hiding behind a, and I'll quote him here too, a sanctimonious veil of progressivism. He made a point of suggesting that the Internet Archive was not a real library, which we'll get back to in a moment. And in their filing, the publishers listed, I think, 127 works accused of being infringed. And they are asking for the court to award damages, injunctive relief, a preliminary injunction, and a permanent injunction. And they are asking that the Internet Archive be ordered to destroy its scans of infringing works.
So, Andrew, remind us exactly what is controlled digital lending, at least according to the Internet Archive theory?
Sure. So very briefly, the Internet Archive's controlled digital lending program works like this. Under, we'll call it CDL for short, controlled digital lending. Under CDL, a library or a nonprofit like the Internet Archive's open library operation, what they'll do is they'll scan a print copy of a book that they have legally acquired or supposedly legally acquired, and then they'll make the scan available to be borrowed in lieu of the print book. It's that simple. They use a DRM-protected one-user, one-copy model, and crucially, they take the corresponding print book out of circulation while the digital copy is on loan. So basically, it's a kind of format shifting. It allows a library that has a copy of a book that it no longer wants to keep on its shelves to turn that copy into a PDF, then put the book into storage, and then lend the PDF copy of a book like they would lend the print copy. Only, of course, the, you know, users could access this book remotely. They wouldn't actually actually have to come to the library and pick it up or return it. So I think the crucial thing here is to remember that these are PDFs, right? These are not ebooks. These are scans of print books. These are, in essence, pictures of pages, not like the modern ebooks we've come to appreciate and read on our iPads and phones. So, you know, this is what the Internet Archives Open Library Project has done for about a decade now, maybe a little longer. The archive legally acquires these print books. They get them from libraries or from book sales, or people donate them. They scan the books. They host them. They seal them away in shipping containers sometimes so that the physical books are no longer in circulation. And then they allow people to sign up for digital library cards, and people borrow the scans like they'd borrow a book, one user at a time. The scans are all DRM protected, and the loans are managed like any digital library loan. And they can only lend the number of books that are available and lend them for 2 weeks at a time. So if they have 50 copies of a book that they've scanned, they have 50 PDFs that can be lent. And once they get to 51, they can't lend any more books until another one gets returned. So very much operates like a library in that regard. Now, you mentioned the Internet Archives National Emergency Library. And of course, that was a very controversial initiative by which the archive decided that all these print books that it had scanned, they were going to take the controls off them somewhat. So because all these print books were locked up in schools and in libraries, Internet Archive decided that rather than having one user per copy, they were going to let anyone who wanted to borrow a book, multiple user copies, shall we say. And that drew a lot of concern. But archive officials say it really hasn't drawn that much usage. Anyway, lending books, and to be sure, you still have to borrow the books from the National Emergency Library, even though you can borrow unlimited copies. Anyway, accommodating all these lends is not controlled digital lending. So we have to make that clear. That whole process is something else entirely. And to be clear, controlled digital lending is what the AAP and the four publisher plaintiffs are going after here with this lawsuit.
At the top of your report, Andrew, you said the suit could be the definitive copyright case of the book scanning era. What makes you think that about the complaint?
Well, you know me. You know, I have some questions, right? So first off, the complaint goes directly after controlled digital lending, which it calls an inventive theory. I'd say it's an invented theory, but I'd say untested is more the word here, because every legal theory is an invented theory until it gets to court, right? And the outrage here among, you know, the publishers and the AAP is palpable here. But I do wonder if that's enough, you know, because it wasn't enough in the Google case or the HathiTrust case. And it wasn't enough in the Georgia State University e-reserves case, which I have to say, it's not lost on me that any day now, the plaintiff publishers in that case, supported by the AAP, could find out if they're going to be ordered again to pay the legal bills for that 12-year disaster of a lawsuit. But I'm not going to run wild here just yet. Let me just focus on maybe two or three things, right, that jump out at me, maybe a few more.
Okay, Andrew, you sound excited, and I know that legal battles like this get you fired up, but slow down, take a deep breath, and let's take this one step at a time. So what's your first reaction?
Well, my first reaction here is why? Why sue? Why sue now? And I get that the Authors Guild and the AAP are outraged by the principle of what the Internet Archive is doing. But it is inconceivable to me that the lending of these scans, which are virtually impossible to use for immersive reading anyway, are denting the sales of these major publishers. You know, one of the curious things in the complaint is that it portrays the Internet Archive's scanning operation as this lucrative money-making operation. And to me, that's just mind-boggling. I mean, maybe it's true. I don't really know what the finances of all this are. I'd be interested in knowing if it's true. But the idea that Brewster Kahle, who is quite wealthy, shall we say, has decided to use his fortune to scan and host old books as a moneymaker just strikes me as strange. You know, he could leave the money alone in the market and get much richer every single day without all the risk of being sued by publishers. So why is he doing this? Because he wants to make money. He's anti-copyright. He's anti-author. You know, I know Brewster a little bit, and I haven't ever found him to be any of those things. I mean, I don't know him well, so maybe there is an evil genius lurking there, like the complaint sort of suggests, this brick-throwing thief that wants to steal books. But you know, here are my thoughts in a nutshell about that. And one of the reasons why I think this could be one of the, as you say, like a defining case, because we're at the what I see is the end of the book scanning era, right? The idea of waging this massive legal battle over scanning and lending old print books as PDFs in 2020. I'm just having a really hard time seeing it. And you can say, oh, well, if everyone did this, well, who else in 2020 is going to set up a huge book scanning operation and invest in a digital lending platform? I mean, Google did it, so it's done there. Brewster seems to have his reasons. We'll find out more about them in court when he answers the suit. But let's face it, if there's one thing that we've learned over the years, it's that these copyright cases go sideways, right? Yeah, I mean, this may be an open shut case on paper. The outrage I can certainly see in the publishers and authors, but these things seldom work out the way you think they're going to when you first file them, right? And I think you've seen that for sure in the Georgia State e-reserves case, which seemed like a pretty clear-cut, open-and-shut case when it was filed, and then 12 years and three decisions against the publishers later, here we are. You know, the idea that the benefit of going to court and fighting to shut down the open library outweighs the risk of this litigation, I question that. I really do. We'll see.
All right, so that's your first reaction, and it's a mouthful. So take another deep breath and let us know your second reaction.
Second reaction was that, well, you know, upon reading the complaint, this complaint suffers from the same problem that I think the Georgia State complaint had. You know, it's really long on outrage and, you know, how the big picture of the operation of the Internet Archive is infringing, much like the e-reserve practices of Georgia State were infringing. But I wonder, is that how this copyright case is going to work? Because it wasn't the way it worked in the Georgia State case. So I'm really curious to see how this case unfolds. Is it going to be fair use tests for all the works in question? I don't know. You know, I'm waiting to hear from a bunch of lawyers I've reached out to see what they think about this. But I'll say this. A lot of this case seems to turn on what a library is. There's lots of stuff in this complaint about whether or not the Internet Archive is a library in the library market and how it works for ebooks. And I find that to be a big risk for the publishers here, too, because what if the court comes up with a broad definition of what a library is and how it can function? Even if they win the case, and you know, looking at the way the case is filed right now, they certainly have a case to file. But, you know, what if the court comes back with this broad definition of what a library is? And I'll remind you that Google has 40 million scanned books in its possession. And the HathiTrust has this huge corpus as well because they worked with Google. So even if the publishers win their case, are there going to be parts of a written opinion here that will open the doors for those entities to make more liberal use of their scanned copies? And throughout the complaint, there are also plenty of references to the library ebook market that publishers are working with. And I mean, hello, you know, where have we been for the last 6 months here, right? The library ebook market, to put it mildly, is not a terribly well-functioning market at this point. We just got done with, you know, the whole two-month embargo for library copies, right? And, you know, library ebooks, they're very expensive and they expire. You can't really build a collection of ebooks in your library with books that expire after 2 years or 52 lents. So I promise you this much, as the publishers will put the Internet Archive and its scanning and its distribution on trial, the Internet Archive is going to try to put the library ebook market on trial, as well as the digital business of these publishers at large on trial.
All right, Andrew. So I've given you two swings at this already. We'll let you have a third one.
The optics, right? The PR gamble here, you know, and during a pandemic, no less. You know, in the complaint, the publishers say the Internet Archive is taking advantage of this pandemic to further its aims. And that's all over the press release materials too, how they're sort of taking advantage of what's going on here to further its aims. But I don't know, man, it's like, good luck with that, right? I promise you the Internet Archive is, you know, we're in a moment now where people are locked out of their libraries and locked out of their schools, where inequality is rampant. And I promise you the archive will find a way and to take the high ground here. And to have, you know, these major publishing conglomerates suing this nonprofit, I don't know. It's the optics of it don't look great. Now, I understand this is a copyright lawsuit, but in the public realm, it's going to be seen as a battle over libraries and as a battle over access to knowledge. And right now, it's not really a level playing field, at least not in the public perception. So, you know, look, here it is. We're in a moment where the idea of copyright reform is finally getting traction in the legislature, right? Antitrust is a huge deal now. The regulation of the tech sector is coming up. The idea of how the internet must be seen as a public utility, especially during this pandemic, that's now becoming an issue. How does this lawsuit serve the broader goals of publishers and the policy goals and how copyright should look in the future. You know, how does this case animate the forces that are going to be taking their case, not to the Southern District and to Judge John Kodal's courtroom, but to Congress in the coming years? If the Internet Archive is shuttered, if the publishers win this suit and the Internet Archive, the Open Library Project goes away tomorrow, I almost guarantee you it's not going to make a difference, a discernible difference to these publishers' bottom lines. Most people haven't even heard of the Internet Archive. And no one I know in the market who buys books would look at this trove of, you know, pretty bad scans. Some of them are okay. You can look at them, but you know, they're book scans and say, well, my book buying days are done. I'm not going to buy that ebook. I'm not going to buy that print book. I'm just going to look at these pictures on the internet. Well, I don't know that that's really the way it works. To me, I do think this could be a defining moment. You know, the Google case was a big deal, but that was about scanning books for machines to read. And that was 15 years ago. This is about scanning books that people can actually read. And I understand, I 100% understand the feeling among authors and publishers that the Internet Archive and Brewster Kahle are playing loose with the law here. And he very well may be. But I do wonder if the risk of bringing this suit is worth what might happen if there's some bad law made here.
Andrew Albanese, Publishers Weekly senior writer, thank you for the analysis and thank you for joining me today on Beyond the Book.
My pleasure as always.
Coming up on the program, the founding editor-in-chief of the Harvard Data Science Review, Professor Xiaoling Meng, recently published an online special issue, COVID-19, Unprecedented Challenges and Chances. The coronavirus crisis, according to Professor Meng, amounts to a massive stress test for data science at a critical time in the field's development.
There's a lack of global protocol of data collection or even understanding of the differences. Yet you have seen that the comparison of countries and systems all the time, right? But the issue here is because different countries, different systems, they have different definitions, different ways of collecting data. So we're not even talking about comparing apples with oranges, which at least they are still wrong, the fruits. We're really talking about comparing apples with bananas or maybe even oranges with footballs.
Can data science measure up to COVID-19? Next on Beyond the Book. Our show is produced by Copyright Clearance Center. Our co-producer and recording engineer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. Subscribe to the program wherever you go for podcasts and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. The complete Beyond the Book podcast archive is available at beyondthebook.com. I'm Christopher Keneally. Thanks for listening and join us again soon on CCC's Beyond the Book.